You're listening to Creative Thursday, episode number 193. Welcome to Creative Thursday with Marisa Ann Cummings. We're talking all things life, business, and creativity intended to inspire and empower you wherever you are on your creative journey, both personally and professionally. Thank you for listening. Hi, hello, it's Marisa here. Super excited to bring you episode number 2 of season 2 of Creative Thursday that you can now also see, not only listen to, at youtube.com/Creative Thursday. Thank you so much for you who caught the first episode last week for letting me know how much you enjoyed it. It's such a small world. I found out you also sewed Emery dresses and you know Christine's work. And yeah, it's incredible to me really how small the online space is and how we really are so connected to one another, especially as creatives. And today's episode, I know you're going to love every single episode. And today I'm thrilled to introduce you to our guest, Elisa Haight Carlton. And this is take 2 of this intro because I was thinking, how do I introduce Elisa and do all of the accomplishments that she has already had in her life do it justice? I'll just give you the rundown of Elisa and her work. So you may know her as an incredible modern quilter. You may also know her through her work with and the fact that she was the co-founder of the Modern Quilt Guild. Have you been to a Modern Quilt Guild show? You might also know her from her books. Yes, she is also an author, Modern Minimal and Block Party. And you might also know her from her first career, now evolving into her main career, from Project Runway. And you might be saying, wait, was Elisa a contestant? Elisa was a casting director. And she still is for the new spinoff from Project Runway with Tim Gunn and Heidi Klum, called Making the Cut. I believe it's on Amazon Prime. You can see Making the Cut. And without giving away too much of the story that she shares, she goes into detail of how all of these aspects and elements of her career weave together. What is interesting is she started quilting after becoming a casting director for Project Runway. And she has also, much like me and a number of my guests, been in the online space since, I think, 2008, 2007. So she's also seen a lot of this space evolve, and she recently made a pivot to, gosh, I just sounded like Ross. I just sounded like Ross from Friends. Do you remember that scene? Pivot. For my diehard Friends fans, you will remember. I digress. She recently made a pivot to starting with two partners her own casting company called Vital Casting. And I love their bio where she says it's socially conscious, unscripted casting. Vital Casting is run with an eye to inclusion, equity, and growing diversity in media representation. Yes, that's so, I love it so much, Elisa. The timing could not be better for such a beautiful mission. And Elisa is also a mom to Gabe and Lucas and married to Gavin. Oh, and She's also been Emmy nominated a couple of times for her casting work as well. So here's how I have this memory. You know, in life, you just, when you look back, you realize there's a lot that runs together. You don't always have specific memories, but who knows why exactly certain moments stand out. Sometimes it's very obvious, and sometimes you think, that's an interesting memory to have. But I have this memory sitting with Elisa at a table. I think we were having dinner, we were having drinks at a quilt market when I was designing fabric, and we just hit it off right away with a conversation about the realities, pun intended. Lisa works in reality television. The realities, or lack thereof in certain instances, of the creative world. And she, similar to me, has a lot of experience in different industries, and then also being part of the Hollywood world and seeing inside that world makes her a very, well, it gives her a very unique and a very keeping it real perspective. And a lot of times you don't know what's going on behind the scenes of so much. Actually, that's the case for all of us, right? And it's not about having disrespect for all of these incredible opportunities and industries, but I think it's fair to say Elisa and I share a similar value of just being truthful about what it's really like to author a book, to work as a casting director, to design fabric. Elisa's also designed fabric as well, to start and grow a quilting guild, to manage, to lead, to create, to parent, to everything. And it's really refreshing. I know it's happening more and more when you find someone who just keeps it really real. It's what honestly draws me to people. And many times I ask people who keep it real with me to be guests on the podcast, because if you know, or on the YouTube series, if you know me, then you know that I have pretty strong feelings about how we can really be a rising tide that lifts all ships. And if we don't have an open dialogue about what's really happening in certain industries and the behind the scenes to invite fellow creatives to make the right decision for themselves, and to really maybe elevate the monetary possibilities and the valuing of creatives' work, and again, increase the potential for more thriving artists. I truly believe in this moment that we are at the beginning of a new awareness around creativity and the value of the artist as well. I will continue to say that probably on every podcast, because I intend to be a very big part of that movement. On some level, I always have. And so anytime I always have been, I blogged about this podcast about it before, but anytime I find a kindred spirit like Elisa who will open up and just share honestly what her experiences are, I feel a little bit less alone in my desire to create a space that is supportive of all of us, to really, you know, follow our passion and to thrive and feel like we can be profitable and make a good living in our industries, even if that means that we live in Los Angeles. Elisa lives here as well. So we talk a lot about this in this episode, and we did Elisa. I'm sharing these in the order that I recorded them. As I shared last week, there was a big delay, longer than I had hoped, before I brought these to you. However, in revisiting all of them, of course, before I release each one, all of our conversations are still relevant and very timely. They are themes that are continual, and this one in particular is very eye-opening, very enlightening, and just really enjoyable. So you're going to hear everything from casting to quilting to parenting to valuing your work as a creative to all of the things in between. And as I was starting to say, since then, Elisa's boys have grown up a little. You'll see her very newborn baby in the video, and she started vital casting. It's so exciting to see her evolve. And she has since also stepped down from leading the Modern Quilt Guild and is involved as an attendee and a quilter. So it's a great example too, and a wonderful story about how you can continue to follow your intuition and allow yourself to create and pivot and change direction or come back to something you loved before. I know you'll enjoy this conversation with Elisa. So without further ado, here's Elisa.
Shoot the casting calls, and there were a couple seasons we didn't have the clap for it. The person was actually, and I was like, this is like a real TV show. Why don't we have a clap?
All right, I won't feel so like newbie. Well, one of the first things, so I don't do any intro.
Okay.
I don't even do that.
Okay.
I mean, there'll be like an intro when it gets posted, but right. I just like to start the conversation, and I think some of what we've touched upon in different episodes, what we really haven't gone very deep on, is like parenting.
Oh,
you just had a baby, and we were just talking now about efficiency and parenting, and that you work at home with your husband. Mm-hmm. You're both creative, and how do you make all that? How do you make all that work? And I'm not even gonna say balance, because I think
there isn't any such thing.
Yeah, I heard recently, first of all, there's no balance between personal and online really anymore in some ways.
Yeah.
And the personal professional lines are getting crossed. And then this concept that we could do all of these things and then be parents and have that all like be balanced, I think we should just stop going for it, right?
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I mean, I think the first, like, My oldest is 4, and then I have now an 8-week-old. And it's taken me about 4 years to realize, like, okay, I have room for 3 things. There's 3 primary focuses, right? There's, like, the job that actually makes money. There's the job that is what you love but doesn't make money, which for me is making quilts. Not the world of quilting, but the actual making of quilts. And then being a parent, right? And I've kind of realized that I can only do 2 of them well at
any one time.
Right. Like, since I work full-time for the Modern Quilt Guild, and that's a steady paycheck, and, you know, so that's the priority. And then having kids, I've made way fewer quilts. You know, almost, I mean, I get, like, 1, maybe 2 quilts a year done right now. And I've had to really cut myself a break in that sense. Like, just not put pressure on myself there, because I also prioritize downtime. Yeah. You know, I don't particularly like to sew at night. I like to just relax and hang out with friends or hang out with my husband and watch some TV or whatever.
Because he's in there too.
Yeah.
He's a priority too.
Yeah, Gavin. Somewhere. Exactly.
Squeezes in.
Yeah, you know, so I don't really sew at night. So as a result, and it's really hard to sew on a Saturday when, you know, the 4-year-old's running around, and like, so I just have cut myself a break with it all. And I think that I really miss it. I miss it, but I'm also just constantly reminding myself that it's a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
That there will be a time when my kids are only this small now.
Yeah.
Quilting is there forever, you know? Yeah. So I'm really, it's hard when it's it's really like a love, you know, and then you just sort of have to put it down for a minute. But I don't want to beat myself up about it either and be like, why aren't you getting more done? And you know what I mean? Because,
yeah, well, that could be endless. Yeah, like exactly. I don't have kids yet. And I feel like that I feel that way all the time. So mm-hmm. to me, I've just learned, oh, it's a state of mind. Mm-hmm. Like you just are, you become used to being a productive person and, you know, juggling, yeah. not balancing yeah. a lot of different things, which mm-hmm. we all do. Mm-hmm. And you can beat yourself up all the time about things not being like at whatever level you want them to be or not feeling like you get enough done on your to-do list.
Yeah.
Right now, I think we're living in a time where just more and more is getting stacked on that. Mm-hmm. And any way that we can all comfort each other and saying, it's all right.
Like, yeah.
And you're right. It's a chapter. There's a chapter for me in terms of my business and building all of this mm-hmm. where it feels like I'm on a perpetual hamster wheel, but I know it's for good reason, right. and I'm just going to not fight it.
Yeah.
I'm able to do it.
And
I'm
that's
excited.
What the job is.
Yeah.
Right? Like the working to make the job happen is part of the job. Do you know it? Does that make sense?
Like, yeah. yeah. We'll talk about... Well, but first, the first thought I had was, before children, how often would you quilt? Like, was it something that
oh my
was,
gosh,
like,
so,
the
so,
highest
so much more.
Priority, one of the highest
priorities? Well, I was still... I was still working all the time, but I was also, I've been a casting director for reality shows for 15 years. And so now I only do Project Runway once a year, and so that's 3 months a year, and then 9 months of the year, otherwise I'm full-time for the Modern Quilt Guild, the organization that I founded. But, totally lost track of what was the initial?
Well, how often?
So oh, quilting when, in the past, yeah. yes.
Pre-kids
yes.
quilting.
So then I was, pre-kids, I was not full-time for the guild yet. I was still just doing casting. So that would be freelance. So you'd get a job for 6-8 weeks and work the day job and, you know, and then, but then I'd have 6-8 weeks with no job at all. So I would just quilt and quilt and quilt and quilt and quilt. I mean, I made so many quilts 2012 and earlier. I mean, so many quilts. All the time. I think now I'm like, God, why didn't I just know that I had all that time before kids? You can't, you know, you can never appreciate what you have until it's, yeah. you know, you're in the next stage or whatever. But, so no, I sewed all the time. Because also then, like, you're not exhausted. You're not, you know, you're tired. And, I mean, obviously you're tired when you don't have kids, but it's in a different way. And it's, you know, it's not emotionally draining the way kids can be. And it's just totally a different kind of thing and activity and way your energy is used. And so I'm sure I was sewing at night then because why not? Like, you know, I could just, yeah, I sewed tons. Tons.
Well, and I always, so Woody, because quilts, and this is a bit of a segue, and then we'll come back to the, how you even got into the reality side of things.
Yeah.
What do you do when you, quilts aren't usually something that somebody sells as a piece
no.
of art, because you can hardly quantify the hours
right.
spent.
Right,
right.
If you're going to have a client who actually pays what it's worth, they're a very wealthy client, that they can pay you thousands of dollars mm-hmm. for, you know, what they have on their bed. Or on their couch or whatever. When I got into quilting, I didn't have any, it was a hobby completely. I had no notions of turning it into any kind of career or.
And when was that? When did that start for you?
I made my first quilt in January of 2008. So it has not been that long. But it's been life changing.
Okay, well, I want to know.
It's been a life change. I mean, finding quilting really, really was transformative for me.
I want to know. I sometimes think in interviews people skip over the beginning, but like there is sometimes that moment where it strikes. Do you remember exactly what introduced you to it or when you first?
Like the moment of realizing I loved it and I wanted to pursue it more and do it? Well, I'd always been crafty. I mean, I would say it wasn't one moment, but more like, you know, kind of stairs where things slowly. And I think with the popularity of blogs in 2008, there was really a more fluid line between doing it as a hobby and doing it professionally, in that you had a hobbyist had a blog, and then, you know, a bigger blog would ask you to do some content for them, and And so, but it was still just a hobby. You know what I mean? It wasn't, there was sort of this, I mean, I think that line's still very fluid. There's mm-hmm. still plenty of people who some, you know, just do it for fun and occasionally do something they're paid for or whatever. Or, but it was, so it was a gradual thing to turn it into, and actually making quilts and my work has never been like the full-time job. That'll never pay my bills the way, you know, never will.
Yeah.
Like it, you can be somebody who in the quilting world, if you make a living, you do, you know, 30 different things. You do books, you do fabric, you do patterns, you do teaching. Teaching is probably the most lucrative part of it, but you're traveling nonstop, and you're, you know, at every tiny little quilt guild in the middle of nowhere, and it can, you know, I have small kids. I'm just not going to travel all the time right now. And that's the whole business of it isn't why you got into it to begin with. I like making quilts. I don't want to have to pitch my books and pitch my fabric and pitch my patterns and develop a ruler that sells. And I mean, there's a lot of people who are really good at that business part of it and who enjoy that business part of it. I don't very much. I've done a little bit of it. I did a couple books because I had ideas for books that I thought were good ideas, and I got to make the quilts for those books, and that's slightly different to me from the then constant pitching and marketing. That part's, I'm not good at it and don't enjoy it. It's so I never made like a decent a few bucks here and there from my quilting, but really what turned the quilting world into my profession is the Modern Quilt Guild, having founded that.
And that, so it's, I love hearing you talk about it because I think this is a big part for all of us. Like, it's a discovery the whole time where you do a number of things, and then if you're being true to yourself, you go, you know, this doesn't really suit me. Yeah. Like a recent story, the singer Sia, do you mm-hmm. know who she is?
Yeah.
She refuses to be famous, and she figured out she hated touring, mm-hmm. and she's writing amazing pop songs for other people. Yeah. And then occasionally she'll keep one for herself.
Yeah.
But it's so counter what you would do as a musician.
Yeah.
But yet I really respect when people say, this is truly what suits me. Mm-hmm. And if I stay true to that, maybe something else will come out of it.
Yeah.
So how did that evolve for you?
Well, the guild was really a very organic thing in that, I mean, I was one of the founders, so it was me doing, the work to, I mean, do you want to hear sort of the whole, like, origin story and the story of the NPG?
Well, and before you do that, so was it seeing quilting online? Like, when you talk
completely
about
online. Bodies?
Okay,
so I came to quilting 100% online.
Okay.
Which is not actually the normal story because there's this huge quilting industry. And I was blogging and making quilts like crazy the first time I ever went to Quilt Festival when it was still in Long Beach. This was August of 2009. And I had made my first quilt more than a year earlier. Almost, and I had no idea this industry existed. I was just in a little online bubble.
I didn't know either.
This online bubble of modern quilters, first of all, a different aesthetic from the industry at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's, you know, crossed over. But, and I didn't know. And so I was like, I'm a quilter now. I'm into quilting. Let me go to see this big quilt show that's just in Long Beach. Sure, I'll go for the day. And I just was like, oh my God, there's this, it's huge. This industry is huge. Like fabric and, you know, everything.
And sewing
machines and books and thread and everything for the quilting hobbyists. But aesthetically, there was nothing there that was my voice or the voice of all the people I had been in touch with and gotten to know online over that time. And so, so I blogged about that idea specifically, like, whoa, this huge industry exists. We are not a part of it. Why are we not a part of it? And how do we become a part of it? Do we even want to become, and just sort of the comments turned into a conversation. And, this woman, Latifa Safir, who I co-founded the MPG with, she commented on my blog saying, well, I don't know, maybe we should start our own modern quilt guild.
Was this 2009?
Yep, August of 2009 at that point. And so I said, great. And we moved the conversation to email between the two of us, and we were off and running and had our first meeting of the Los Angeles Modern Quilt Guild. This was the first Modern Quilt Guild in October of 2009. So by October, we'd organized our first meeting. There were 20 people there. And now we're, it's August of 2016, and we have over 11,000 members in the Modern Quilt Guild.
From all over the country, or is it
global? All over the world. All over the world. So, I mean, obviously, from those 20 people at the first meeting to now over 11,000 members, we've done so much work to become a real established organization and to grow. And that was the first couple years of it, me on my couch, with my laptop. And
on your couch.
Yes, it was a different couch, but yes, on my laptop. And it wasn't until a little bit later when I could step back and sort of look at the big picture that it made sense. My casting work is people organizing, and the guild is people organizing, and I just realized, oh, okay, there's an overlap there. That makes sense. I'm using that same skill set where when you're casting a reality show, you have to do, we call it outreach, where you specifically look for a certain type of person.
Okay.
Be that, pretty girls in their 20s or fashion designers or whatever. Mm-hmm. You specifically are looking for a segment of the population, and you're spreading the word to them that you're casting this show. So I just took that skill set and, spread the word to this specific segment of modern quilters that there is this guild, So it was like sort of a very similar skill set that I was able to use to just do it all online,
Yeah.
And also just by sharing what we were doing, I was blogging about our meetings. And so all these other Modern Quilt Guilds just organically started popping up. And literally the only link at the time was that they would email me and I'd post their blog on the Modern Quilt Guild blog. It was a WordPress blog. That's all it was, with a sidebar of a list of links with guilds. And but then, any organization needs to formalize if it's going to last.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was not being paid at all to do any of this.
Were there membership fees already?
No. At that time, maybe each local guild had one. Like, they were collecting dues from their members. But, and then we were starting, we were starting to get sort of feedback that, like, okay, you're a guild and membership needs representation on a board, and because we'd begun our whole nonprofit, getting our nonprofit status at that point. But how do you represent membership if you can't define who they are, right? Like, we can't just say we're the Modern Quilt Guild if, like, no one submitted us a list of who's in the, the New York Modern Quilt Guild or the, the Kansas City Modern Quilt
how
Guild.
Do you keep track of
exactly.
All of
but so that's a huge, huge website is what that is. It's a membership database. It's a huge expense to build. So we were like, okay, we need money. But how do you get money when you don't have any,
revenue?
Exactly. Like, there was no revenue. It's just people doing their own thing in their own cities. And so that's when we decided it was time for QuiltCon, the first QuiltCon in 2013.
Oh, okay.
So we put up our first QuiltCon before we had formalized membership, because we needed money to formalize membership. So we did our first QuiltCon in 2013. And at this point, everyone who was helping was volunteer. We had our first employee was right before QuiltCon 2013. We started actually paying Heather Grant, who lives in Austin and is the director of marketing and programming for the guild now. So, and then soon after QuiltCon, I started getting paid too, because it was like, all right, we finally actually have some money.
But, so how many years in is this?
That was 2013, okay. And it got founded in 2009. So
that's 4 years of a lot of
volunteering.
And
yes.
Community building.
Yes, yes, yes.
I know.
And volunteering from that whole community. I mean, like, it was just, and
like
it was this organic, I mean, people who don't know about the modern quilting movement, like, it's a very specific community, and it's, a small percentage of the population, but it is a huge thing. It is a huge There is a large, large community who is part of the modern quilting movement and who have been following it since the early 2000s and who are incredibly passionate about it. And so there was plenty of help. You know, people were willing to step up and give their time in a way that, because it was the first time that this online community was moved to in person.
Yeah.
And both locally in your own town, but then at an international level with QuiltCon. It was the first time that people who were online friends in Australia and England and here and like finally were meeting in person. It was the first time an event was put up specifically for that community. So yeah, there's always been a lot of, I mean, and you were at QuiltCon
just this
you
year.
I think there's like a palpable energy in the air. There's a palpable excitement in the community when they're all together that way. And that's why we do it. So
yeah, I really enjoyed it because I hadn't been to other markets in a few years. And I saw everyone that I've become friends with in the fabric space. It was like so lovely. And then just to see, and I got
footage.
But
it's like just your friends, right? It's not, you go to quilt market, there's like your friends. And then this whole other community and that you're, I mean, there's overlap in all of them, right? But QuiltCon is like, it feels like market, but just your friends. You know what I mean?
It's obviously, you know, similar-minded, similar aesthetic, or appreciation of a similar aesthetic.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, it just naturally makes it fun. But I also, I'm a big believer in top-down, so I also know you, and I just feel like it infuses it. Whoever, whether it's a company, whether it's an event, like, that really matters. It, like, starts here, and it goes all the way down to the volunteers who are helping you.
We try really, really hard. I mean,
it shows.
And the organization is run by its members. Like, you know, I co-founded the LA MQG, and Heather founded the Austin MQG. Like, the people who run the Modern Quilt Guild are its members from the beginning, you know, and who have the love and passion that the members do. We are its
you
members.
Are
we
them.
Are its audience. We are its,
yeah.
I mean, customer's the wrong word,
to
but
me,
you know what I mean.
It's the best version.
Yeah.
Like, when you create something out of solving a problem, like, you basically were like, this doesn't exist. Like, it's amazing that it didn't.
Yeah.
But then it also all makes sense that the online world was able to facilitate this opportunity. Because did you actually have a blog before you were quilting, or you started it when
you... I started it because I was quilting.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it instantly, I mean, I was around the same time, 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, realizing, there are all these amazing creative people that we had no access to. And it felt, at the time, it felt very small. It felt like I truly had friends in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I feel that now, but a lot of those people are in-person friendships that have developed over years of going to conferences or, you know, being able to meet those people in person somehow.
Yeah.
And that is something that is so important, is having it. Online is wonderful and it's a great starting point, but the longer I'm online, like, nothing replaces this interaction.
No, nothing does.
Well, and it's how it's really, I got to meet you briefly once at a guild meeting here, but then I really got to know you by going to Quilt Market and meeting
you
there.
That's right, yeah.
And we just, like,
just sitting next to each other during trips.
just, you know, talking industry.
Yeah.
And keeping it real. And I was like, I need to invite Elisa on the series because she keeps it very, very real.
Yeah.
Because, well, when we were having that conversation, and it would be interesting to hear how you got into the reality side or casting in general.
Oh, casting. Yeah.
Because when you are, you know, when we were talking about doing all these different things to make the engine work, essentially, you have a perspective outside of that world. And sometimes I feel like I have that too because I was an artist entering it and, like, was already familiar with the blogging side a little bit, and then just being a fine artist and then entering the fabric world, it traversing all these different spaces always helps me keep perspective. Yeah. We do get in our bubbles.
Yeah.
And sometimes it frustrates me when I'm like, remember, there's like a bigger world out there. Oh, like, yeah. It's not just... It's comforting to be in the bubble, but it's also like, it's not just...
I actually have grown to really dislike being in the bubble.
Explain.
I think that what are petty dramas feel much bigger when you're in the bubble.
And that's what I think, too.
And when you're... When you step out and you lead the rest of your life and you can see it, put it more in perspective and how it bothers you less and, you know. And I just... When you know people online and dramas happen online, the positive thing is that it doesn't actually impact your physical life, right? Like, you can put down your phone, stop looking at it, and lead the rest of your day, and it doesn't impact your day at all. Because it's not like an office job where you can't just put the phone down and you're living it, you know? Right. So, and the bubble, I guess, is your email and Instagram and Facebook, and that's what the bubble is, and so there are times when you can just get yourself in a funk over just things you're looking at on your phone, you know? I try not to do that.
It's a very real part of our lives today. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just beginning to acknowledge it and figure out how to...
And people are so much meaner online. Like, it's the hardest part about running the guild. Is that for some... I guess it's the nature of human... Any grouping of human beings has people who are nice and people who are not, right? But the hardest part about running the guild is that some people assume... Like, I go through life assuming good intent.
Mm-hmm. I try to, too.
Yes. Like, yeah, and obviously sometimes you need to stop and check yourself and go, all right, good intentions, that person's doing the best they can, like, you know... Yeah. But often we're treated like we are not approaching all of this with good intent.
Like, assumptions are made right off the bat.
And that's hard. That's hard because we're a nonprofit. We get paid nonprofit salaries. We are not doing this for money. We're not doing, you know, we're doing it because we genuinely love modern quilting and we genuinely want to provide all this for its community and we want to be a large part of and enhance the modern quilting movement. Like, that is our mission, and that's what we're working towards. And our intentions are good. They're, like, positive towards it. And so sometimes you deal with people who just come at stuff as... We've got so many members. We've got so many members now.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean...
It's turned... Yeah, it's just we never could have anticipated all that it would be, and it's awesome and so exciting. And we're still growing. I mean, that's the crazy thing. You know, QuiltCon... 2017 is going to be in Savannah. Registration opened in June, and you know, so again, it just sold out. Boom! Like,
awesome.
I mean, we've had some real difficult registration. Was technically there were problems, and it was not. It was kind of a nightmare. But independently of how it actually, you know, went in terms of just clicking on your computer, sold like crazy, and so. We are definitely providing something that the community wants, and you know, so yeah. I don't know where I was going. Well, I started with the bubble being hard, you know.
But, well, I'm gonna bring you back because I know a lot of people are like, you know, Tim Gunn.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
So how did you get involved in casting to begin with?
Casting was totally random. It was a long time ago. It was, I went to college out here and I studied here in LA and I studied film. And so I knew I was going to do something in the industry. But then after I graduated, I moved to Europe for a couple of years. My mom is from France. So,
she is?
My mom is from France. So I'm lucky enough to have dual citizenship so I could live and work legally in Europe. And so I was in the Netherlands. I was in Amsterdam and The Hague for a couple of years and working there. And then, decided to come back and just was going to need a job. I was, you know, I was 23. I was so young. I was 23. So I was the age where you're like, I need a job. What is there? People, help me. What should I do with my life? And I had a friend who was already doing reality casting. She was working on The Real World. And she was like, I think you could do this. And I was like, sure. You hardly, and this was like 2001. The job hardly existed in 2001. Mm-hmm. I mean, reality TV was just ramping up. And so I was like, what do? I interview people. Sure. What is this? You know, and the job was just being defined and created. And so, Real World Chicago was my first reality casting job in 2001. And you get hired freelance, you get hired show by show. So from there, I started at the bottom of the ladder and just, you start as like an associate casting director, and you're a casting director, and then you're a supervising casting director. And, you know, you work on small, lousy shows, and then you work on bigger network shows, and, you know, you just sort of work your way up like you do in any other industry. It was working steadily. I'd built up a good network so that I'd get work year round. But it was never a passion. You know, you're working on a dating show and you're interviewing another girl about her love life. Ready to die, you know. It's not.
What dating show is that?
Oh, I don't even know. I worked on all different kinds of shows. Yes. Luckily, I never really worked on any like morally reprehensible. There's one that was questionable, but they didn't tell the casting department what the true premise was, so we didn't know.
You got bamboozled.
Yes, exactly. So we didn't know what the concept was as we were casting it. So other than that one, nothing was. Really, got the call to work on Project Runway, for season 7, which was in 2008, I think.
That's interesting. So it timed. Yeah. So you didn't necessarily have a passion for sewing.
The sewing overlap is a total coincidence.
How has that influenced you now in terms of casting? Like, does it...
Appreciation
for it, or
I found quilting and was just like, now I found what I really love. I can no longer do these horrible jobs, you know. And it's freelance, so you're not digging ditches. Obviously, you're like finding candidates and then you're interviewing them and then you're picking from them. I mean, it's not digging ditches, but when it's a really lousy show, it can be soul crushing. But luckily, it's freelance, so it's soul-crushing for 6 weeks. And when you're on week 3, you remind yourself, all right, 3 more weeks. But so I was also able to do the quilting in between, and then just gradually started saying no to more casting jobs. Because it's freelance, I had that flexibility, you know, until... I'll do Project Runway till they stop making it, because I'm interviewing interesting creative people and the show, you know, it's got a big budget, and the expectations of what you deliver are realistic. That's something else that's happened in reality, is that the budgets have gotten smaller, and so you have less time to do more, and like, I'm just too old for that. There's 24-year-olds who are so hungry.
Yeah.
They cannot wait to get in there and do that job. And I'm like, great, let them have it, you know?
Been there, done that.
I can't do it anymore at all. So I mean, a lot of the work with the Guild and, like, my eagerness to turn it into something real was also that. Was that I didn't want to do this, you know, what was my career was in no way fulfilling. And I'd reached a ceiling where, you know, I didn't want to become a director or producer of reality shows. So, and I'd gotten so that I was running the casting department of Project Runway, which to me is the best reality show on TV. Obviously, I'm hugely biased, but I felt that way before
I
worked on it.
Yeah.
I felt that way before I worked on it, too. And so I was like, okay, I'm running the casting department of my favorite reality show. Like, there's nothing else in this field that I can do that will make me happier or so... I'll do that job for 3 months a year forever. And they just got picked up again for 3 more seasons. So
they
I know.
Did.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
So
yeah.
I know, like, you know.
What do you think that work so well? Like, why do you think that one hooked in on such a powerful way?
Well, I think, first of all, it's because the format has been copied a lot with Top Chef and all these other things. But fashion is visual, so it's perfect for TV. I think Heidi Klum and Tim Gunn have a certain chemistry that, like, you can't... Like, they've tried with All Stars to find a model who's as good as Heidi at what she does. They aren't... Like, Heidi's good at what she does, and not yeah. all models can do what Heidi does. Like, have a personality and her opinions and... You know what I mean? Like, they're just... She's such a...
Yeah.
Her... A personality, but German also just... Her. But also casual on TV, not stiff and, yeah, you know, yeah. she's just
she
really...
She's really fun.
Yeah, she's very... I've never met her. I've never met Heidi. So,
I was in a restaurant with her once.
Oh, really?
She was stunningly
yeah.
gorgeous.
Yeah, I've seen her in person, but yes, she's as good looking as... Her jeans are good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also... I think people, Tim Gunn actually always says that what he loves most about the show is that it rewards hard work. And he's right. And most reality shows don't. I mean, there's others that do where they, the can't, you know, like Top Chef, where the people who are on the show bring a skill to the table. They're not just there because they're attractive train wrecks, you know?
Right.
They're there because...
Is that ever an assignment? Find attractive train wrecks.
In so many words, yes. I mean, they're not actually putting it to you that way. But yes, that is the goal on most reality shows,
yeah, those
you know?
Surprising, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... You have to pass psych. There's like a whole part of background check is a psych check too, so they can just be train wrecked just enough, not too much. So, but Project Runway. I mean, they're actually talented people who have a skill, and they're there for that reason. And the show shows it's impressive.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is. It is.
And everybody loves a pretty dress, so at the end you get the runway, and you know, I mean, I just think that plus Tim and Heidi and the judges, and just, it's just been this sort of...
Like a perfect
Perfect
magic.
Fit, yeah.
I just always appreciate his honesty, like his...
Tim's?
Yeah, and the way that he also, because I would always have issues when it felt like people were just being criticized too harshly, but he just has this way of presenting his point of view that works. It's like real, and then you still feel warmth from him.
Yeah,
is that
no,
fair
he's
to say?
Really, he was a teacher at Parsons for 20 years before he, I mean, that's how they found him and cast him.
Oh, wow.
Was
so this
was
his first TV gig?
Yeah. First TV gig. Yep. He
became a hit.
Yes,
like
later in life,
right?
Like, and I think a lot of why he is who he is. I mean, he's who you meet when the cameras are not on is exactly the same guy as when the cameras are on. Of course, there's you know,
yeah,
people are always filtered when a camera's on versus when it's not. But he is the same man, and that's because nobody knew who he was. He worked a normal job, and you know. It wasn't until later in his life that he became famous. He knew who he was already. You know?
I think that's like what you get from him just instantly.
Yeah. No, he's the perfect mentor. He can tell you he hates your garment without hurting your feelings.
That is true.
Yeah. No, he's really good. He's really... And casting calls, that's what they are. I mean, he doesn't come to the casting calls every season, but many seasons he does. He's on this panel while everyone is applying to be on the show, and they all bring their work, and he gives the feedback, and he's just so good at it. He's so good at it. The people who are just beginning, all the way to people who are super established, and, you know, he's always got some piece of feedback for them that... And we, having cast the show season after season, we've seen so many designers grow specifically from that casting call's feedback.
Yeah.
Because once you're out of school, when do you get, as a fashion designer, just working in your own house, doing your friends tell you it's cool and whatever, but to get that sort of structured, formal feedback that includes criticism from... It's usually Tim, and someone from Marie Claire is always there. And so from these people who are fashion experts, once you're done with school, when does that happen? It doesn't.
No.
So we see designers grow a lot from it, too.
So
is
it
fun.
A large pool of people that gets whittled down to that particular
group who get invited to the casting calls, yep. And then that gets, they get a yes, no, or maybe from the fashion experts, whether or not they're ready to be on the show. Just from a sewing and fashion
Have you had people come back?
Oh, yeah.
And then you've seen the progress?
People apply over and over again, yeah.
And have some people actually made enough progress to...
To get on? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, all the time. Seth Aaron, who Do you know who he is? He won season, I think it was 7, actually, the first season I did. He applied like 5 times before he got on.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, it's, well, I think tons of people do that.
The appeal also is just fostering creativity. Mm-hmm. Like, even if, you know, I would love to design clothes at some point in, like, my big bag of million things I want to do with my life, but it's all relates. Like, to me, creativity is just across the board. It's a similar thing that you're trying to cultivate.
Yeah.
A quality. And watching someone build something is always inspiring.
It is.
Watching them make progress and
so
get
inspiring.
Better. Yes. And have the failures, because we all have failures. Yeah. It's part of developing yourself. And I think that's really exciting to watch.
Yeah. And actually, for me personally, in terms of my quilting, watching these casting calls and hearing the feedback for all one designer after another getting this feedback, like, even though they're talking about clothes, it applies to, you know, when you say you should learn to edit, meaning you over-design, there's too much. Like, that applies to any kind of creativity, you know. My quilting has been transformed just by sitting and listening to casting call feedback for fashion design, you know.
I love it.
It really has had an impact on my voice as a quilter in a totally different medium. I would never sew clothes. These people go to school for like 4 years to be able to do amazing.
It's just so daunting to me.
No.
But I don't think this is easy either. I mean,
I've made a lot of quilts, and it takes a lot of practice to become, I think, really good. But the thing with quilting is that if it turns out 2 inches shorter than you anticipated, it still fits your bed. You know, garments, it's like, there's no wiggle room that way. This is just 2D design versus 3D, you know? Yeah. The way your brain has to think about it is very different. It's all fabric, but otherwise, it's very different.
It's the pattern, like, those can get really intricate. And it's just wrapping your mind around a completely different form of creating.
Yeah.
I mean, I've learned sewing, or apparel sewing, and then I've taken quilting class. Like, again, I wish I had so much more time to do it, because I love all of it, and I appreciate it, and I'm so thrilled that I have a little bit of an understanding, but we have this one sitting with us, and I love that you're saying that. You're actually making me want to think about that for myself in terms of design, being able to edit, like, to have it be so clean and sophisticated and... like, just, it's so right on, at least for me as a design aesthetic.
Thanks.
This really, really speaks to me.
Thank you.
But sometimes I think people misunderstand simplicity and, like, sophistication with design as easy and simple.
Yeah.
And
well, easy and simple are different things, is what I always say. Because it's true, especially for quilting, my work is very minimalist. For quilting in particular, there's a lot of really busy, lot of prints, mixing prints, tons of color.
Even in the modern, the modern is definitely more on the minimalist.
It is. I would say it is, yes. Not to say that there aren't modern quilts that are...
that can be very elaborate.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I think, you know, and just sort of defining modern quilting in general as a whole thing in and of itself.
I'm scared to ask. But I don't want to leave anyone out. Like, it encompasses a lot of people.
You know?
A lot of perspective.
But
at
the same time, we had to... this is a specific problem we ran into, the Modern Quilt Guild. Like, if you have a quilting magazine or a traditional quilt show or whatever coming to you saying, what is modern quilting, you have to have an answer. You can't... and if we, you know, in the early days when we were like, we have to write a definition of modern quilting... we were like, if we don't do it, non-modern quilters will. And if you're everything, you're nothing, right? Like, we're not everything in the quilting world. We are modern quilting in particular. And if we don't define it, others will. And so we really worked long and hard at a definition, which has been edited more than once. And, you know, we still talk about continuing to edit it. And also because it's a young movement, it changes too, you know. In 2008, you would have said like, oh, everybody uses white as a background. Not at all anymore. Okay. I mean, still some people do, but that's not a dominant, I'd say it's not no longer a dominant characteristic in modern quilting design. And so that's been a really hard thing to put words to an artistic movement. And,
yeah.
You know,
would
and
we
it's,
ever,
it's, yeah.
How would we ever really
right.
do that? But essentially,
we do our best. But we try.
But it takes a lot of, I personally think that, I could be biased because I'm a painter who could paint an exact replica if I want to. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't know where that came from. It's just there.
Yeah.
It doesn't fulfill me, although sometimes I toy with going back to that, but it doesn't fulfill me in the same way that I choose to paint very okay. simple.
Yeah.
Like, I choose that. It's
yeah.
not...
Right.
But it's born out of a lot of different skills that mm-hmm. that particular style developed mm-hmm. in my 30s. And,
yeah.
And same even with my fabric design. Like, when mm-hmm. I transferred initially that vibe, it's... There's a lot of reasoning behind that and reason why I'm drawn to this kind of aesthetic. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's important to distinguish because, I don't know, it's just probably personal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we get these ideas in our head. And the thing about when I entered the fabric world, I had no idea. Like what you're saying, like when someone said quilt to me,
mm-hmm.
I pictured a certain color palette. I pictured a certain level of... intricacy and like detail in the pattern design
mm-hmm.
and that was all I had in my head because
yeah.
that was not a part of my growing
stars,
up
stars maroon
yeah.
and forest green
yes,
yeah
like chestnut
right.
colors
yeah. Yeah.
and when I went to my first market I was like oh my goodness I had no idea
yeah
and then so that was 2011 like
mm-hmm.
you were already in the process of that and then more fabric designers were
mm-hmm.
entering the scene and now to walk QuiltCon just this past year 2016 it's like wow like it's
yeah.
just really exciting
mm-hmm.
to see and I think a lot of people still don't understand like it's
mm-hmm.
still people are learning about this movement
mm-hmm.
and the evolution of it
mm-hmm.
but what is interesting sometime I'll have to show you is that my godmother gave me a quilt that she made like where it's stitched on top, hand stitched,
mm-hmm.
and it feels very modern to me.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
And it has
yeah.
like these vintage pieces, and I thought, oh my gosh! Like, of course, this was existing as well.
Of course.
It's just now that there's like a label, and people maybe who weren't aware
mm-hmm.
of the shifts are like, hey, yeah, this is actually more my aesthetic. I want to jump in and do something
yeah.
about this.
Yeah. No, I mean, we're all every art movement is from the one before. Or
yeah.
It
no
builds
new
on.
Ideas.
Yeah,
yeah.
No new ideas at all. We just happen like you know the movement isn't just the aesthetic; it's also the community and the attitude.
Can you describe what the attitude of the movement is?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a lot of it is a spin-off of. Sort of the perceptions of what quilting is. And that, like, every time I say I'm a quilter to a friend at a party or whatever, oh, my grandma does that. And I'm like,
great.
That's, you know, that's awesome. And maybe their grandma's quilts are totally funky and cool and, like, crazy art quilts. And, like, there's totally a good chance there is. But it's likely that grandma's quilts are stars and maroon. And, you know, the industry has this stereotypical customer and also a stereotypical attitude of perfectionism
oh.
in the craft.
Okay.
Right?
That would make
like,
sense.
If,
like
meticulous.
Exactly.
That it's a very meticulous craft. Unless you have a perfect quarter-inch seam allowance, you are doing it wrong. I mean, I have a friend who said her first quilting
seam
class.
Seam allowance for anyone.
Yeah. Being how far into the edge of this fabric you sew. But,
yeah.
Who said her first quilting class, they sat there for 3 hours and practiced their quarter inch seam.
That's not fun.
That's going to put anyone off the craft.
Yeah.
I mean, give me a break. Like,
yeah.
no one. Whereas the modern quilting movement, well... craftsmanship matters enormously. I mean, obviously it varies from person to person. People are into whatever given craft for whatever reason. Some people just enjoy the labor of it. It's meditative. It's relaxing. They love to just sit and sew and sew. Some people love the design of it and are only pushed to do the sewing in order to see the results of that design. You know, that's, I'm more like that. I like quilt, the actual process of sewing. I don't love the actual process. And I go and I do it because I want to see my, the design in my head become, be in fabric and be, you know. And I also feel like me personally making it is part of the maker thing, you know. But in general, in modern quilting, there's a much more relaxed attitude of you need to care about craftsmanship so that your quilt stays together. But perfect is boring and perfect doesn't matter. And don't let perfect push you away from learning this. It's just 2D design. It's sewing pieces of fabric together in a fashion you find attractive.
That's perfect to describe it like that.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be any specific aesthetic.
Well, and in, there's the improv quilting also, which right. I love. Mm-hmm.
And is a huge part of modern quilting. I came to quilting through improv quilting.
You did, okay.
It's what made me fall in love with it, is improv piecing completely. You can do wider than a quarter inch seam allowance. Who cares? You're trimming it down to the right size rather than getting to the right size with right. your perfect piecing.
You can just let your mind just
it's
go.
Just whatever looks good. So piece, trim,
be
press,
so
keep
fun.
Going. You know, yeah. I love it. I love improv piecing. This is not at all improv piece. I've come to love an aesthetic that's not at all improv piecing, but in terms of process, improv piecing is probably my favorite. Just in that you just get in the flow of just sewing and, you know, you don't have to worry about perfect measurements and blah, blah, blah. And so I'd say that that's sort of the attitude that goes along generally with modern quilting, is a looser, more relaxed, just have fun doing it. Who cares if it's perfect or not? Make it for the baby who pukes on it. Who cares? Just put it in the washer dryer. Actually, one of the specific things that we do list in terms of the like traits a modern quilt will have is that it's functional. Specifically, that it's functional. That it's not meant to. You can hang it on the wall, but it would hold up in the washer dryer. You know, it's not covered in beads and you know what it, like
yeah.
yeah. Which is one of the things that separates it from art quilting.
Oh,
but that's
yeah,
a whole other
that.
Conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is a distinction there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Art quilting is a movement that, you know, happened really 60s, 70s, 80s. And
more something and, you could frame, potentially.
And hang on the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, you could hang any of these on the wall.
Yeah.
But their intent is function, is to use them. I often say modern quilting is sort of a combination of traditional quilting and art quilting. In that there's a huge emphasis on design, like there is with art quilting, but they're functional quilts like they are in traditional quilting. And, yeah, I mean, Jackie Gearing, who's the chair of the Modern Quilt Guild, says it's a spectrum, and it's true, you know.
Yeah.
They're very, very, very modern quilts. There are quilts that have a modern characteristic and are otherwise more traditional, and, you know, there's a whole spectrum there.
Would you say that, because I would love for you to address, I know we can talk forever, because I love this, but you're pretty savvy about your business choices, and would you say, and we've talked a little bit about the quilting industry mm-hmm. as a whole, mm-hmm. and you even touched upon it, that people aren't always getting compensated, maybe, for the work that they're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even just from the mere... Like, you can't quantify the amount of hours, so people can't necessarily create quilts and sell them mm-hmm. and make it be worth their time. Well, the first question is, are most people, would you say, hobbyists, or are a lot of people really trying to build a business out of it?
I mean, there's a lot of people trying to build a business, I think, specifically in the modern quilting world, because of there's a lot of stay-at-home moms who... this is a means to make a few bucks, yet still stay at home, yet still do the thing you love, which mm-hmm. is making quilts. And so I think there is a lot of overlap in it that way, because it's a way to, rather than make it a career, make a bit of money
right.
to supplement whatever, to offset your fabric addiction or, you know. And I think that they can sew quilts for whatever given fabric company's booth at market during nap time. You know what I mean? Like, so I think there's a lot of overlap there. But I mean, I don't know that there's more... I don't think that in the modern quilting movement there's more people trying to turn it... Well, I mean, I don't know. More people trying to turn it into a career than there would be in the traditional quilting world. I mean, there might also be a case to be made just that because of the age of everybody. I mean, if you're 70 and you're a quilter, you've already had your career.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you're 30 and you're a quilter, you're looking for a way to...
Well, and what would you advise somebody who comes into this industry? What would you tell them, like, they say? Have a backup.
Keep doing the other job. No, I mean, not to discourage, but it's a lot of hard work, and it's, you know... Do you know who Angela Walters is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Angela, to me, is the perfect example.
She does...
She's a long-arm quilter. Quilting. Right.
And just to explain, it's what seals everything together. Like it's
sewing
stitching.
Through the three layers.
Yes.
Right. So, there are things called long arm quilting machines, which is there's a huge rack. The machine moves over the quilt as opposed to, like, it's like pen and paper. Like, if I'm just using a domestic sewing machine, the paper moves under the pencil, if the pencil's the needle. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas on a long arm, it's the paper moving over the... I'm sorry, the pencil moving over the paper.
Right.
That makes sense because it's on a rack and you move
it's
the actual
fun.
Sewing machine. It's so much fun, right? So she's known for her long arm quilting. That is her specific focus. But the woman is amazing in terms of fabric lines and books and teaching and crafts
she's
classes.
She's prolific.
And, I mean, she does it all. And I'm sure Angela's probably making a decent living. She's making some good money because she's constantly doing the next new thing. She's constantly coming up with, you know what I mean? Like, she's, and meanwhile, promoting all the stuff she already has, the books, the fabric lines, you know.
And she, you can get paid to do just the
yes,
long arm.
Yes, and
part,
she gets paid
I remember
too
she
long
would
arm.
Do a lot of the
yes.
sample quilts for markets.
Right,
and,
exactly. Yeah. But if you don't do all those things, you can't make any money. And how do you prove to a fabric company that you should have a line without already having your following? Like, it's sort of this,
I don't
like,
think you can.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So how do you get those things without having those things? I mean, a lot of hard work, you can do it. A lot of hard work, a unique voice, too. I mean, I think you really have to bring something new to the market.
I think so, too.
You know, you can't, like, I think you look at Carolyn Friedlander or Alison Glass.
Yeah.
To me, they're the new, those two are sort of the new... Anna Maria and Denise Schmidt, like, they're the next generation of that level of success in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they both brought something. They both have their own unique voices.
Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're saying because I even struggled joining the fabric industry and feeling like I couldn't add enough time
mm-hmm.
to what's truly required even to have a fabric line.
Yeah.
Because now I think it's also... It's you're pretty much responsible for your marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be wise to enter it with nothing.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to let anyone know about you? Like, you need to at least have your feet wet and understand what it means to market. I mean, I think some people in the industry are doing amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. They have amazing ideas just to get people using the fabric and sharing the fabric. And it's, that industry in particular is huge on the use and seeing
mm-hmm.
fabric is so different when you just see a swatch of it versus
yeah.
you're like, oh my gosh, like, where do I get these colors? Because
yeah.
look how amazing they look together.
Yeah.
It's its own like entity just with so many different pieces. So you've really got to have what you were talking about earlier, this outreach and the
yeah.
ability to do that genuinely and
mm-hmm.
make a community. And
yeah.
to me, it's like the only way to truly make a living. The only... We'll wait for you, Otto.
Sorry. He'll sit down. Come on, Otto. Chill out. Like,
we
he
have,
needs to chill out.
We
there
have
we
all
go.
All the outtakes.
There we go.
We had Frank the Lizard. yeah, just the outreach that is needed in the community building.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of work. I would only advise somebody to, if they wanted to make a living just doing that, then you've got to go all in. You mm-hmm. have to do all of those things. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully negotiate wisely for yourself. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And also just be aware that the numbers are just not high in general in the industry. No matter how well you negotiate, you're never going to... Yeah. I mean, working in TV and then I'm like, you know, like the budgets are just... It's just not even comparable. You just can't, you know. Like, the paycheck I make working for 3 months, like, you know, there's a reason I'll do it forever. Like, you know, I mean, it's just... But it's that same thing where you're not in the bubble, and so then you come in. And I've tried... We've really worked, too, with the guild, sort of try and change some of those norms that exist, or at least they don't apply in our organization. Mm-hmm. When we hire you to work at QuiltCon, you get your own hotel room. You don't share it with somebody else.
Because to me, we're
just grown-ups. Like, that's just how it should be. Mm-hmm. We can make that much less money and have teachers appreciate it that much more. Yeah. You know, just small things like that, that were just a given. Like,
but it's so not.
Yeah.
That's what's weird. Yeah.
We like never, not taking care of people. Nobody ever does anything for the MQG totally for free. Now, sometimes the paycheck is tiny, you know, $100 for whatever, but it's still, you know, we don't fully expect you to do it for free. We don't
pay
you
to speak. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're asked to speak for free all the time or in exange for attendance, which sometimes mm-hmm. that makes sense, but it's still a lot of work and preparation in speaking.
Yeah. And the idea that you just do anything just for the exposure is just such, like...
I know.
Boy, I mean, that should be in addition to the check. Even if the check is $100, like, just show the respect that there is a check at all, you know?
There's like this, something really important about that exchange mm-hmm. of being paid something mm-hmm. for your time.
Yeah.
And just even being honored with it. It's mm-hmm. so important.
And also rights. You know, we're specifically with the Modern Quilt Guild, like for, as an example, we have this quilt of the month. If you're a member, once a month you get emailed a pattern, right? So it's just this program, one of the benefits we have for our members. It's members who design and make the quilts. But the rights remain with them. They can, you know, we don't own that design at that point. And again, because the guild is run by people who do the thing we are representing, we think about these things in a way, you know, a magazine just wants to be able to reuse your pattern over and over whatever profit, so they own it forever.
Yeah.
You know? And just stuff like that. It's, we are always trying to support the artist as much as we can.
Well,
you know?
I think that's all we can do is just, sometimes I feel like I hit my head against the wall and trying to educate people about these things. This is part of it, really, mm-hmm. to have these conversations. And I know it's not about changing what's been, you know, overnight, mm-hmm. but it isn't the same. We're not living in the same world. And we all have so much more access to knowledge, to mm-hmm. creating on our own, producing on our own. Mm-hmm. It needs to shift. It cannot remain the same. And life is expensive in mm-hmm. a way that maybe those numbers that were set through publishing and fabric design were set at a time where maybe more people were hobbyists and they didn't need to support themselves.
That's the other thing.
In Los Angeles,
I was just going to say, I'd also, anywhere. You were saying, what would you recommend to someone who wants? I'd say, live somewhere affordable. You know, I mean, Amy Butler lives in rural Ohio. Like, that makes a huge difference for how far the money... I mean, Amy Butler's as big a name as it gets in this industry. Like, she's... I'm sure it was much easier for her at the beginning that she lived in rural... You know, her cost of living is a lot lower than ours living in L.A. You know? We're not smart about it.
Well, we are because we get each other. Like, that's true. There's no, so much about
I wouldn't make the trade. I love living here, but it's so expensive compared to any...
Well, and ultimately, I think my point with that is, in some ways, it really shouldn't matter where you live. Like, everybody should be fairly compensated. Mm-hmm. And I would just say I don't think that industry is. I just don't. Like, for what you're asked to do, you're not fairly compensated. Mm-hmm. I will go on record and say that.
No, I mean, and it's we could talk forever and ever about why and why it perpetuates.
In certain elements, but, like maybe for teaching and other things. But in terms of licensing and publishing, I should be more specific.
Yeah.
And I think I know.
And I think it's because there's so much crossover with hobbyists.
Yes.
So you have people who it's not how they're supporting their family.
Yes.
So they're okay with the numbers. And if they're okay with the numbers, then you got to be because.
Yeah.
Right. Because someone else will write your book if, I mean, not your actual book. You know what I mean, though? Someone else will take that slot on the book list.
Right.
If.
So incremental, Elisa.
Yeah.
Do like. Little stuff.
Yeah. And just do what you can where you are. I mean, you know, I negotiated my first couple of book deals. The only book deals that we negotiated. We asked for more. And I mean, I could be wrong, but there was, I felt as though there was some surprise that we asked for more. And I was just like.
That's my episode like, number that, one.
Isn't that what you're just supposed to do? But,
yeah,
you know.
No, it's, I'm glad you bring it up in case anyone missed Jamie's episode where she's like, you always ask for more.
Yeah.
Because then you might end up getting what you actually need.
And who comes to you with their maximum at the beginning? Nobody.
Most people just accept right away.
Most women just accept right away.
Well, and that's, it's... somewhat dominated by women.
When you get to the top.
No.
Not when you get to the top.
The top is men, and then it trickles down to women. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that part of the work is really interesting with the guild because, you know, I don't do the work of selling sponsorships and stuff. That's Heather's job. But that's, you know, you're dealing with bosses a lot of the time there, so it's interesting. It's interesting. You're dealing with men who don't sell, who don't, you know.
Oh, right. And how do you, like, get them to understand the value and...
Yeah.
But you're doing it.
And sons. There's a lot of sons of the original owner running the company now and that kind of thing. It's interesting.
It is. Well, but, it's evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So, in closing, is there anything, like, on your mind that you would want to share or anything that we've touched upon that you would want to expand on or, like, final bits of advice or thoughts or?
I mean, I don't know. I just think, big picture, you just have to be super self-motivated because it's you working on your own, doing your own thing, no matter what that turns into. Now, obviously, like something like running the Modern Quilt Guild is totally different from doing the creative side of having fabric and patterns and all that. But it's still, I mean, as we're a membership nonprofit, but it belongs to all our members. For me to say it's my organization is not correct, but because it's got all its own chapters and all these members, but I am one of the founders. I've done, you know, at the end of the day, it's me and then gradually lots of other people, but just putting in the legwork that made it all happen. And it's just, it doesn't always have to be creative. You don't have to be, it's not the creative side of me that built the Modern Quilt Guild. You know, it's the organizing people side of me that did it. The type A, like, you know, doer. Who, exactly, you know, who made that happen. So even if you don't think of yourself as an artist, there are places for you to work in the industry and, you know, and to build your own thing, you know? So, I mean, I guess just do the legwork. Do the work.
Yeah.
Nobody's doing it for you.
Well, and you see that I'm glad that you said that because a couple things you brought up, we do live in a time where things are so fast that people expect things to be instantaneous. And when you really sit down and talk with anyone, even if you just learned about them, like you just learned about Tim Gunn, you know, through Project Runway, you're like, oh, this has been his whole life. No, there's all this life to this particular person that you're seeing now. And all this work that was put in, it's almost, I would love for people to really, that we should all learn to enjoy that process and the work that gets put in to build something.
Yeah.
So, do the work.
Yeah, do the work.
You can say it to them.
Do the work.
That'll be the theme of your episode. Well, thank you, Elisa. I could talk to you forever.
It was great chatting with you. I'm happy you were interested in having me.
Of course. Yeah. All right. We're good. Right. We're good, Sean.
Thanks. Good work.
I couldn't.
Well, let me turn the AC on. Yeah.
Creative Thursday is recorded and produced by me, Marisa. You can find all things Creative Thursday at creativethursday.com and creativethursdaycourses.com. You can find all things Elisa Haight Carlton at elisahaightcarlton.com, spelled A-L-I-S-S-A-H-A-I-G-H-T, Carlton, C-A-R-L-T-O-N. And at her casting company, vitalcasting.com. Same on Instagram, at Elisa Haight Carlton and at vitalcasting. I hope you enjoyed this episode and are enjoying the new Creative Thursday series, both here and on youtube.com/Creative Thursday. Be sure to share this episode with your friends, family, fellow creatives, and fellow creative business owners who would like a little extra inspiration this week. And thank you so much for your reviews and your messages, letting me know how much you are enjoying the episodes so far. More to come. Until next time, friends. Thank you for listening.